Federal Drive is presented by GEHA, Government Employees Health Association, proudly providing health and dental benefits to federal employees and their families. Visit GEHA.com.
Trade with other countries. It's something nations both promote and protect, like crown jewels. Now, U.S. Customs and Border Protection has launched two oversight platforms anyone can view to see what's going on in trade violations and enforcement actions. For details on the two new dashboards, we turn to the CBP's Executive Assistant Commissioner for Trade, Anne-Marie Highsmith. Ms. Highsmith, good to have you back.
Thank you. Thank you for having me back. Good day.
So tell us about these dashboards. What is it they show, and what do you hope to get accomplished with them?
So we have two new dashboards that are included as part of our online trade violations reporting tool. The first tool is the e-allegation statistics dashboard, and that dashboard shows multiple types of reported trade violations, including when companies don't follow labor laws or safety rules. The second tool is called the Enforce and Protect Act, or EPA, statistics dashboard, and that one focuses on a specific problem, and that is anti-dumping countervailing duty violations. And that means companies that are trying to sell their products in the United States without paying the right duties, taxes, and fees.
And were these dashboards mandated by a statute, or is it something that CBP felt it just wanted to get out there information-wise?
So these are CBP's efforts to be more transparent and to improve understanding and information sharing in these important trade areas.
Well, let's talk about e-allegation statistics. These, you say, are violators of labor laws and safety rules. These are allegations against U.S. companies or companies that are bringing goods into the United States otherwise legitimately?
Well, these are all types of violations in our trade space. These tools, the Trade Violations Reporting Tool and the e-allegations portal, are publicly available to anyone who has an internet connection, and you can submit online all types of violations. We deal a lot with forced labor laws, health and safety, counterfeiting, false countries of origin, all the laws that the U.S. Customs and Border Protection enforces at the border, including unfair trade practices such as anti-dumping and countervailing duties.
Well, are these the allegations that are brought by CBP, or could they also be brought by other, say, Commerce Department, for example, entities?
The dashboard in particular reports and collates allegations that are made by the public through the portal. It's not inclusive of all investigative and enforcement casework that is undertaken by the agency, but rather those that are made by outside entities. We do get them from trade associations, also individuals and corporations. One thing to note is that a primary driver of the development of the e-allegations dashboard was that once the allegations were made by CBP, the folks that made those allegations didn't have an easy way to track what we were doing with them. And so this will help shine a light on the types of allegations we're getting and what we're doing with them.
Yes. So if someone alleges, say, a trade association or maybe a manufacturer says, hey, look, these watches coming in are not really our watches or our clothing, or, you know, there's so many cases. What happens at that point? They make the allegation to CBP, and then CBP does what then?
So we pick it up. And we, depending on the information that's given, we triage it and then take the next appropriate steps. Sometimes that's sending out requests for further information to the alleger, to the alleged violator, to related parties. Sometimes, you know, it includes, well, usually includes, you know, running through our own systems, checking against the data that we have on those importations. And sometimes it involves shifting the allegations to other parties who are more focused on handling the type of violation that's alleged.
We are speaking with Anne-Marie Highsmith, Executive Assistant Commissioner for Trade at U.S. Customs and Border Protection. And on the Enforcement and Protected EPA counterfeiting site, the other dashboard, this then depicts things that CBP has done, that you're starting to do from the allegations. Fair to say?
So the EPA dashboard does, in fact, focus on that one specific problem. dumping, which is attempts by foreign manufacturers to sell their merchandise in the United States at unfairly low prices, which cause harm to U.S. businesses, right? Because they just can't compete against that unfair trade practice. And so we do investigate to see if these companies are breaking the rules. And if they are, we take steps to enforce those rules and level the playing field for our U.S. businesses. That could mean charging additional duties, collecting revenue and duties that were not paid correctly, and as well as penalties and potentially criminal violations. So the dashboard is a public tool that's designed to enhance transparency and provide detailed information into our enforcement activity in this trade space.
Well, who tends to bring anti-dumping types of allegations? Because you need to have some data about the costs incurred by that foreign manufacturer to know if they're dumping or not. You might be able to infer that from low prices, but you don't really know what their cost inputs are.
So usually it's the U.S. competitors who bring those allegations and say, this foreign manufacturer is selling to my domestic customers. There's no way they can be producing this merchandise at this low price because I know how much it costs for me to produce it. Or, you know, sometimes they have more specific information that they derive from sources and inputs that may be in the same country, labor inputs through their trade associations. They get detailed information. So we have the ability to examine that data and then also compare it to information that we have in our own holdings in order to reach conclusions.
It sounds like the federal government, which ultimately enforces trade regulations and laws, though, has kind of an army of supporters in the people in the private sector that are actually affected by illegal trade activity and dumping.
It is one of the privileges that we have here at U.S. Customs and Border Protection, and that is to protect U.S. industry from unfair trade practices and to ensure that there is a level playing field so that industry, American businesses, communities, and families can grow and thrive in our business environment. And that is a measure of economic security that we provide to the American public. I will note, too, that these dashboards are an important tool for those U.S. businesses who are seeking to secure their supply chains, and that it gives them data on trends and hotspots and risky locations so they can make good business decisions to eliminate violations or potential violations that will disrupt their supply chains.
And how many cases are going on at a given time in a year? Is it tens, thousands, millions?
We do get several hundred allegations. We get them on a regular basis, and we take action on all of them within a spectrum, right? Some allegations don't have sufficient information or have other challenges, but we do take action as quickly as we are able. And the public can see those results on our dashboard.
Anne Marie Highsmith is Executive Assistant Commissioner for Trade at U.S. Customs and Border Protection. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And we'll post this interview along with links to the dashboards themselves at federalnewsnetwork.com/Federal Drive. Take the Federal Drive with you. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Leadership today, especially within the federal workforce, is being tested more than ever before. As the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency's Chief People Officer, Elizabeth Comstetter sees a focus on people as absolutely crucial to her leadership style. Comstetter joined Shane Canfield, WEPA CEO, to reflect on her years of experience leading in the federal human capital space.
Hello, and welcome to the Lessons in Leadership podcast. I'm your host, Shane Canfield, CEO of WEPA. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Elizabeth Comstetter, Chief People Officer at the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. Elizabeth, welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here.
In your current position at CISA, one of your responsibilities is ensuring a people-first culture. Explain what that is, and what's the role of leadership in creating and shaping that culture?
Yes, at CISA, really paramount to our culture is a people-first, driven aspect, so that we are really looking at how do we accomplish our mission through our people. And in order to do that, we really value our people. We want them to feel empowered and supported and respected, and also that their managers care about them. So well-being is important. Psychological safety in the workplace is important, so that all voices and ideas are heard. So I like to call it our North Star. Having a people-first culture really starts with the people in order to get our incredibly difficult mission accomplished. In terms of leadership, which is a great question, I think we all know that culture is really driven by leadership and the behaviors that we allow and we reinforce in our leaders. So we really work at making sure that our leaders are bringing out the best in their people every day. So again, that they feel they can bring their voice, especially an opinion that might not go along with the majority of a group, so that we get that diverse perspective, we get those different ideas and experiences. And that's really where we find that it's important that leaders are purposefully bringing out their talent on their teams to enable our mission.
Yeah, excellent. We're going through a culture project at our work.
Oh, great.
Yeah, it's been 6 months in the making, and it's going really well, but it is work.
Yes.
And it requires from the top down, so I'm also involved in that. I hear you.
Great.
Throughout your career, you've piloted many different talent management programs, including at NASA, the CIA, the FBI, just to name a few, and you have an amazing career. What have you learned, or how have you might have changed along the way in creating and leading those programs?
Yes, and I am so honored to have had a career in public service across multiple federal agencies, always in the realm of human resources and workforce performance. And I think because I study organizations and people in them, I've come to realize, particularly in the federal government, that many of our programs are really grounded in the industrial era thinking, that this is organizationally structured in a hierarchy with boxes and lines on charts, with the center being around jobs and what do we need to get this job done in terms of skills and training. And what I found is that we're really not in the industrial era anymore, where we would promote the smartest people who knew that work, and they would then tell the people on their team how to do things and oversee that work. We're now in a digital era and the information era, where work gets done collaboratively across geographic boundaries and certainly across org charts. So we like to call it networks or hierarchies, and we really need to, again, unleash people so they can find those other people who are working on similar problems or have the right ideas. And so I really like to think of our work now in the talent programs being human-centered. It's more about the user and the experience than about the rules and regulations. So although we have to have rules and regulations, certainly in human resources, is that person experiencing what they need and getting what they need for their role at that time? So not so much on the job, but on the person. So for example, we're recruiting. What's the applicant experiencing? Because if they're not having a good experience with our organization from the time we're recruiting them, they're going to go work for somebody else. Same thing with like first-time supervisors. We know they need certain training, but telling them to sit in a class for 1 week and then hope a year from now they'll remember what they learned to apply, that's not really human-centered. The human-centered is what do they need when they need it, and building modules or just-in-time training and bringing that to the people, to that user, as they need it. So that's really, I think, the most important focus of talent programs today in this era to enable the workers to be the best they can be in their roles.
Excellent. New thinking. This is always an interesting question. Has there been a time when, as a leader, that you've made a mistake? And what is that? And I think most important, what did you take away from that? What did you learn from that?
Well, I kind of chuckle because I think as leaders, we have to learn to recognize our mistakes, admit our mistakes, and that they are opportunities to learn. And so I've had to do my own self-reflection on making mistakes and when things don't turn out the way that I expected them to. Makes me think of a time when I was at the Transportation Security Administration and I was a supervisor. And I was really embroiled with my program. I was the technical leader of it. I understood it. I'd run it for years. And I was making a briefing for a decision that had to be made about this program that was very near and dear to me. And I presented the briefing to one of the very senior people in the agency. And I think there are about 20 people in the room. And I had gone through the briefing, answered all the questions, and that leader then said, okay, I'm going to go around the room and get everybody's opinion, and then everybody gets to vote, which kind of set me aback because there were people in that room that didn't have any technical knowledge about my program. She even turned to the executive assistant there, taking notes on the meeting, and said, go ahead, and I want to hear from you. And I realized, in hindsight, I had stopped listening. I had been in transmitting all of my knowledge and what I saw to be the right way, and I was not listening to different perspectives in the room because I didn't think that, I didn't value that they were bringing any kind of input to this particular decision. And it didn't go as I had hoped, and I left very disappointed and was busy blaming the senior leader and how that meeting was conducted, that she let all these people have opinions when they didn't know, in my mind, didn't know what they were talking about. And so in reflection on that, I realize, and now as I've moved into more senior leadership positions, I realize that was a mistake, that it actually is really important to listen, especially to people who have different perspectives or at a different point in the career, not just the people who know the program or the technical really well. And so that was a mistake I made, and I realized in my own sense I wasn't listening to very different opinions, and I probably should have because I would have learned more about what was needed for this program going forward than just leaving, getting upset that it didn't go a certain way. So I've really practiced active listening. I've practiced making sure there's very different people on teams and certainly on committees or councils, that we need early careers, people new to the agency, people who haven't walked in the shoes of the technical workforce, because they're asking questions we need to hear for these programs to be successful.
Excellent. Your career in talent management means your work is very closely tied to people. And even your title, Chief People Officer, what does that mean to you to be a leader in the federal system with that focus?
Isn't that a great title? I just love the title Chief People Officer, and I think it's my dream job, really, to be focused on people and culture and the workforce strategy for the whole agency. And I'm just so excited to be at CISA at this point in time. We're only 4 years young as an agency, so we're really still creating who we're going to become as an agency and what is our culture and what kind of people and talent do we need to be sure we have to be successful. So it's very exciting for me to be in this role with a intentional focus on culture, because it's one of those things, if you leave it to chance and you kind of hope it goes the way you want it to, it probably won't. So by building programs, including leadership development programs, including any kind of training and learning and career growth and engagement programs and listening programs, that's what's really key for, I think, for our agency and particularly me in this role. I think in the federal government, we got used to doing annual survey, the Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey that OPM, Office of Personnel Management, runs every year. So we would do a survey and we'd read it and we'd say, oh, this is the opinion of our people. And then we would do action plans and then we'd roll out certain activities that we would hope would increase engagement. In this era, you can't do once a year and understand what your employees' experiences are, what they need, what's working well, and what needs to improve. We need active, ongoing listening programs. So one of the things we're doing at CISA is having more pulse surveys, having more focus groups and what we call sensing sessions, expecting our leaders to have office hours where anybody can come and just talk about what's going well, what do they need, how are things going, because we feel like it is an ongoing need to hear from our people. And I think in this role and over the years of serving, I've also realized there's never a one-size-fits-all. You know, we think certain people need certain things at certain times in their career. There's no one-size-fits-all. Neither can we also customize everything to every individual. So there's got to be a sweet spot in building really great talent programs, but also, like I said, thinking about, can we do this in modules? Can we make it a menu? Can we do it just in time as people need it so they can practice the new skill or knowledge in their role? So I think we have such great opportunity, again, with the technology that enables us to really focus on how we connect people with their work and their team to get things done in very new ways.
This is always an interesting question. Is there a figure either from your personal life, your past, somewhere in history generally, that inspired you, your leadership style, how you view leadership?
There are many figures who have been very inspirational to me, but there is one that sticks out, and that's my mother, Paula Brownlee, who has been a very inspiring leader to me all my life. And I think because, first and foremost, she had a strong family and a strong career, and that's something I always wanted. And I saw her first as my mother, but then I also saw her as a leader in her career and in academia, which was her chosen field. But I always knew her family came first. And as I saw how she balanced different family needs with also a growing and more prominent career positions in leadership, that she had to balance that. And I think I learned from her that you can have both. You have to focus on different things through your career and through your life, but that you don't have to trade one for the other. I've been married, happily married, for 32 years, and I'm a mother of twins who are almost 24 years old. So, and I've had a great career in public service. So I think that having her as a role model has really helped me find my own courage, find my own confidence, and find my own voice in how I can prioritize the things that are most important to me so that I can actually balance both family and career.
And you're doing it well.
Thank you.
Having known you now for 7 or 8 years, yeah. And worked alongside you, your passion is infectious.
Thank you.
Your intelligence and the thoughtfulness with which you approach all of these issues, it's an honor for you to be here, and thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
I'm Shane Canfield, CEO at WEPA, and until next time, have a great day.
Find the full podcast and future episodes of Lessons in Leadership on the Federal News Network app and anywhere you enjoy your podcasts.